our friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Mike, how hard are you right now?
Oh, man, I've been hard since you said, hi, welcome to Friends with Fantasy Benefits podcast.
Do you mind taking a gun and shooting me? Because the Giants probably shouldn't have won that game.
We are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
I feel touched in a special way.
Don't make it sound weird for our listeners. We'll lose the five that we have left.
We are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
This is the first year I actually kind of bought into him, and maybe that's why he's sucking us, because I actually bought into him this year.
It's your fault.
We are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Welcome to the Friends with Fantasy Benefits football podcast. I'm your host, Ben Brentz. I'm joined by Eric Mackey. How are you doing, Eric?
Doing good, Ben. How are you?
Doing good, Eric. It's been some time, unfortunately. You know, we've had some complications that haven't really allowed us to put some podcasts out, but I'm ready to get back into a groove. I've missed you.
I feel touched in a special way.
Don't make it sound weird for our listeners. We'll lose the five that we have left.
Well, that's possible, I suppose.
Eric, why don't you tell our listeners where you can be reached on Twitter?
So you can be reached on Twitter at Mackey671FWFB.
I can be reached at BBrennisFWFB. Eric, why don't we kind of jump right in and talk about the biggest news of the week, and that's the Aaron Rodgers injury. How does this affect Green Bay going forward?
Well, obviously, you're not going to be able to replace anybody of the caliber of Rodgers, regardless of who your backup is. You're probably going to see an initial hit to the offense until Hundley gets a little bit more comfortable with the starters. He did make some fairly decent throws, but he doesn't have quite that polished pocket presence Rodgers had. He doesn't really have a huge ability to make something out of nothing just yet, but I think for a short period of time you're probably going to see a decrease in the offense as far as production to kind of like your big plays. You might see a little bit more of a conservative game plan to some extent, just to build some confidence up. But I wouldn't completely write off the offensive weapons of the Packers just till he gets a little bit more comfortable. What you might end up seeing is a little bit more of them trying to establish the run game, or you're going to start seeing a little bit more of the check down game earlier on in games, similar to what they had to employ in Atlanta with Ty Montgomery last year. So I think there's going to be a decrease initially, but you've got a guy that was a fairly decent quarterback in college. He's been in the system 3 years, so it's more of a matter of getting that chemistry established within that offense. You'll see a little bit of a hit, but I don't think it's not going to be a situation where the backup's a complete crap show either. So,
do you think that this means that Martellus Bennett will get a boost?
Well, I'd like to think so. Rodgers never really utilized the tight end a whole lot, other than in kind of certain game script situations. He never really got targeted heavily. Usually you'll start seeing a little bit more of that when you get the younger quarterbacks, but Bennett, even when he was getting targets last game, he was dropping most of the ones that were thrown at him. So I don't know if there's going to be enough of a trust with him. He could see an uptick in targets, but I'm a little bit cautious as far as expecting ridiculously high output from him when you're probably going to get better production out of the backfield just tossing checkdowns.
Yeah, and I think that the other thing is Bennett hasn't had the ability to go run as many routes as fantasy owners would like this year, because they have had injuries to the offensive line, and he is a good blocker. So I do think that that's holding him back. and they may keep him into block more given the quarterback situation, the fact that Hundley is not going to be able to scramble like Rodgers. So I don't really see a major fantasy boost for him. The person who I expect to probably have the most fantasy positive gain probably is Ty Montgomery, and for the wide receivers, I would say it's probably Jordy Nelson, just because I still think that Jordy's their best guy, even though Adams has run a ton of routes this year and had a lot of passes thrown his way. I do think that Jordy Nelson is going to be the go-to person for Brett Hundley.
Yeah, he should be, and you could probably see a little bit more of an uptick in usage by Randall Cobb, too, just on kind of those short slant routes they like to run. But I think probably the one that'll get a little bit more of an impact, depending on how the offense gets established, is you're probably going to see a little bit of decreased usage with Davante Adams.
Do you think that this is the perfect way for Hundley to be able to get going with them going against the Saints? Or is this something that, given how the Saints have played the last few weeks, that you think that may be a long day for the Packers?
Well, I don't expect them to put up the same kind of defensive outburst that they did last week against Stafford. Stafford's never really been the best mobile quarterback at this point in his career, and he's also dealing with a hip injury, so there really wasn't a ton of mobility. You still have the same offensive line concerns, that you're going to have in Green Bay that you had in Detroit, but you've got a little bit different weapon base available to you, where, you know, in Detroit, once Golden Tate went out, Eric Ebron's got hands of concrete and can't catch anything, and they really don't have a run game to speak of. The Saints just kind of took advantage of it, and they're a different team when they play in the dome too, so I don't expect it to be a situation that they're going to match last week's output.
All right. Why don't we move into the next topic, and that's going to be talking about New Orleans. New Orleans has played better the last few weeks. They did trade Adrian Peterson away, so that made Ingram have a significant amount of touches. Not that he already wasn't, but he had 25 rushing attempts, which is, you know, his highest output of these for the season. He had 5 receptions. He had a good all around game. What are your thoughts on Mark Ingram going forward now that Adrian Peterson's not there?
You know, I think probably what you see with Ingram is you're probably going to get roughly similar production to what you've got in the last 2 years out of him. Peterson wasn't getting a significantly high workload, but he was still getting, you know, anywhere between 8 to 10 touches a game. And now depending on the run game aspect that they're going to need, you're probably going to see those get distributed probably on, 60-40, maybe 75-25 split between him and Kamara. But between the two, Ingram's going to have the biggest impact. And if they get up big like they did last week against Detroit, at one time they were up by 30-plus points. So, all they had to really do was just run the ball. I don't expect him to end up getting 30 touches a game from here on out. But I think if anything, it just increased his workload floor to where, he's going to definitely get probably 25 touches a game, and it only boosts his potential output for the rest of the season.
Do you see Kamara as someone who can get 15 touches a game consistently at this point, or at least 10 to 15?
I think his role's fairly solidified. You'll probably see kind of that similar right around 10 to 15 touches. He probably got a little bit more of a workload as far as the run game goes than you're probably going to see the rest of the season, just because of how far they were ahead. But, his big benefit's still going to be in the passing game. But he's kind of quietly creeping up to almost flex consideration at this point.
Yeah, I like Alvin Kamara because he is a guy who can catch passes. He's a guy who's shown that he's able to run the ball effectively this year. This is the type of offense that I think he would be able to excel in, and if something ever happened to Ingram, he's going to be the guy who's already been established early in this season as someone who's getting touches. So if there is an Ingram injury, I think he's going to get as many carries as he could handle, basically. What are your thoughts on the rest of the New Orleans offense with Snead coming back and still dealing with injuries, Michael Thomas there, Kobe Fleener and his infinite terribleness, and Drew Brees even?
I think probably what you're going to see with New Orleans is probably more of the same. You're going to have better production at home than you will on the road. But kind of the interesting part is if we are starting to see a little bit more of a maturation in that defense, you know, if they do get up on people big in a hurry, you'll probably see a little bit more of a shift away from the passing game. Just kind of what we've seen a little bit, you know, last week, where, you know, there's no need to let Breeze get exposed to get, you know, hit by dropping back. But I wouldn't expect anything different from what we've got unless, you know, for whatever reason they are able to get up on people big. It doesn't seem like they're going to keep that gas pedal to the floor like the Patriots did. They were kind of content just to maintain ball control and try not to let Detroit get back into it.
Are you potentially worried about the upcoming schedule for Michael Thomas just due to the fact that some of the teams that they're going to be playing either have not been performing great this year or aren't that good in general? And if the Saints are playing good, since they're going to be playing against Huntley this weekend and the next two at home against Chicago and Tampa Bay and then in Buffalo, do you think that of those games that they may actually get up big and may not have to rely on Michael Thomas as much, or is this something that you don't worry about at all?
I'm not really worried about it with Thomas. I think what you saw last week was more a product of Darius Slay kind of locking him down. Every other matchup he's had so far this season, he's at least hit 80 yards, except for opening game against Minnesota, which he had Xavier Rhodes on him. So I still think, you know, he's a guy that you're going to start every week, regardless of who the matchup is, regardless of blowout potential. It just shows that there is a little bit of ability for his game to be kind of hampered a little bit if he is going up against a upper echelon corner.
All right. Is there anything else you want to talk about with the Saints?
No, I think we're good there.
Eric, the next topic we're going to be talking about is Adrian Peterson. Adrian Peterson went absolutely wild against Tampa Bay this past weekend. He had 26 rushes, 134 yards, and two touchdowns. Is this just a product of him being able to come in and succeed in Bruce Arians' offense because of the type of schemes that it is? Or is this just Adrian Peterson being Adrian Peterson and the Saints not having a type of offense that's able to complement what he's able to do?
Well, I think, you know, and most of the time with Bruce Arians' offense, he tends to run, if he does have that bell cow back, he tends to basically just lean on that one back the majority of the time. Granted, you know, Peterson doesn't have the same receiving skill set that David Johnson has. The big difference is he's getting a workload. He's a guy that needs the touches, you know, if and that's why it kind of boggled me a little bit that the Saints actually signed Peterson, because you already had Ingram there. They drafted Kamara. You knew Peterson wasn't going to get the touches. Well, if you're only giving him 8 touches, you know, a week on average, he's never going to get in a rhythm. He's never going to have the capability to wear down the defense and just, you know, eventually run over people. I mean, it's pretty crazy to think that he got more snaps last week than he did in 4 weeks with New Orleans. Now, you know, part of the thing with Tampa is they did have a couple key pieces on their defense out. But I think what you're seeing with Arizona is, you know, they're going to give Adrian Peterson the workload. He's got a fairly favorable schedule coming up for the next at least 3 to 4 weeks. maybe even 5 weeks as far as rush defenses are concerned. The interesting part with him is going to be, what are they going to do once David Johnson comes back? Because he could be ready as soon as Thanksgiving weekend. So, you know, with Adrian, as long as he's the sole guy back there, he's going to get the workload. I don't expect him to put up this stat line every time, but, you know, you should be able to get kind of what you've got from the Adrian Peterson of old. I don't think he's ever lost a step. I don't think he's, you know, declining athletically. It's just he wasn't getting the carries, and you see what happens to backs like him. I mean, Marshawn Lynch is the same way. He doesn't get the carries, you're not going to get that production.
So basically what you're telling me is that the seventh round pick that the Saints got was probably not enough.
Probably not.
The thing, obviously, the fantasy owners do have to be worried about that actually have Peterson is what happens when David Johnson comes back. It's exactly like you said, because that could be an injury that's, I believe, 3 weeks away from potentially having him come back, if I recall. I don't know if you can confirm that, but I believe that there's another 3 weeks before he is eligible to come back. And if he does come back and Adrian Peterson is playing well, Bruce Arians, like you said, has a bell cow type back. It's not like he's just going to bench Adrian Peterson, and you're certainly not benching David Johnson. So how do you see these two potentially coexisting in an offense?
Well, and that kind of leads you back to kind of an interesting construct with, you know, if David Johnson comes back, I think part of it will depend on where the Cardinals are standing-wise at that point, too. I mean, if they're not going to be eligible to for the playoffs, you might as well just run the hell out of AP and save David for next year. But I don't, you know, both guys are workhorses and both of them need the touches. And it's not, you know, I don't see Arians going to a two-back system. And Peterson runs better out of single-back formation anyway. So I don't know. It's kind of one of those. It's going to be a nice problem to have, but it's also going to potentially be a headache because, you know, David's the better back of the two at this point in time. But, you know, if they're shooting for a playoff spot, they may utilize David Johnson more just because he's the more well-rounded back for this type of offense than AP is.
Do you think that there's any chance, since the trade deadline is pushed back this year to Halloween, that if Adrian Peterson is playing well and David Johnson is progressing well and seems like he could be back right after Halloween within a week or so, do you think that there's any chance that the Cardinals actually potentially look to trade Adrian Peterson away just because they know that DJ is coming back? Or is this something that is probably not even going to be considered?
I think given as stagnant as their offense looked as soon as Johnson got hurt, I don't see them, you know, if they're making a run, I don't see them trading Peterson at all. Mainly just for an insurance standpoint. I mean, if, you know, once David Johnson went out, I mean, you can't rely on Ellington or Kerwin Williams to carry the load, and Ellington's not the same back he was his rookie year, and you know, after those knee injuries, he's basically a third down back that if he's in space, he's fine, but otherwise that's it. And Williams is kind of a plotter. So, you know, that offense, once teams weren't really having to respect the run game at all, you know, it basically just shut down. So I think it's going to be one that Peterson's going to probably stay on the team unless they're out of contention, and then they may try to ship him while they've got value, or they could just hold on to him to save David Johnson for next year. But I don't think it's going to be one they're going to try to trade him at this point.
What do you think of this wide receiving core now that Adrian Peterson is here? Do you think this is going to open things up for them? Because Larry Fitzgerald is already having a good season. Do you think that this is going to make him even better, or keep him as a potential top 10 wide receiver? And how does this also affect Carson Palmer?
Well, I think if nothing else, it gives Carson Palmer a little bit more time to actually get the ball down the field, because he's not going to get run over every play. I mean, that offensive line is a little bit shaky. I don't know. I think it could have a little bit of an impact on Fitzgerald just because sometimes you get receivers that run out of the slot predominantly like he does. You know, if you don't have a good run game or your run game's stagnant, a lot of times your slot receiver basically acts like that running back where you can get those 5 or 6 yard clips. Where I think it actually may help is you may have a little bit more of that deep field threat opening up for like John Brown and Jerron Brown and J.J. Nelson. And you might see Larry get a little bit more open due to that too, because it can just spread the field out. So I think all in all, it's going to help the passing game, but I don't necessarily know that one of them's affected more dramatically than the others.
What do you think that this does for John Brown specifically? Because as he's come back from his injury, we've seen him play more and more snaps. He has had touchdowns in back-to-back weeks. He's not someone who's going to get an insane amount of targets or a ton of catches, but he's someone who's going to be able to be a burner. He's someone who's probably the team's second-best overall receiver when he's healthy. Do you see him, now that Adrian's here and Fitzgerald is playing as well as he is, that this could be an offense that is actually performing well and keeps off defenses on their toes consistently from week to week, given the weapons that they have?
Yeah, I mean, provided he can stay healthy. I mean, that's been the big thing this season between his hamstring and his quad. You know, and for a guy that's really reliant on speed, you know, if your legs are having issues, whether it's quad or hammy, I mean, you're not going to be able to get that separation as much. So if he is fully healthy now, I think as far as he's concerned, he's a guy that I could only see targets potentially going up for him as he continues to get healthy, but I don't think Arizona is going to try to rush him back either just because of that sickle cell. It takes him a lot longer to heal and recover than most other athletes just due to that trait. So I think his outlook is definitely better than it was when AP was not there at this point.
Yeah, I agree. I think that he's someone, and I was high on him coming into the year, and I think that the talent that he has is very good for this type of offense, and you can see that they want to try to get him the ball, and they put him in good spots too, but obviously that he has had nagging injuries, and there's not much that can be done, unfortunately, about that. But I think as long as he's healthy, he keeps defenses honest, and him with Nelson and Jerron Brown, the three of them are able to just kind of spread out defenders and have Larry Fitzgerald kind of attack the middle. And now if Adrian Peterson actually comes and performs, you have a competent offense. And we know that Arians is a good coach and someone who can actually take advantage with the offense. And this Cardinal team is someone that can actually be a threat in the West, given the fact that no one's really running away and no one's kind of shown that they're going to be able to run away with this division. I mean, the teams that you didn't really expect to do much in, the Rams and the 49ers, have been very competitive in a lot of the games, and the records haven't shown as competitive as they have been. You know, the 49ers could easily be a team that's like 3-3. Rams could easily be better than their record and everything, and Seattle just doesn't seem right, and we'll see how they do against the Giants this week. Because I'm not overly impressed with how the offense has looked. And if the Giants play defense like they did last week, then Seattle's not really going to be a major contender in the West. So I think if they're able to keep afloat, I think this is a team that could compete for the division title.
Yeah, I agree, especially with, you know, I mean, San Francisco's basically turned the season over, at least next week, to CJ Beathard, so good luck with that. And like you said, I mean, Seattle, until they figure out that run game, they're gonna struggle. They're not really built for a good explosive passing offense at this stage. And the Rams, I think, are probably, they're still kind of a dark horse, I think, for that division, but some of the shine's kind of wearing off a little bit. Some of the defenses are able to scheme a little bit more towards what they're doing at this point, and so we'll see if they can kind of come back. But there's a good, very good chance, I think, at the end of the year we could see Arizona in the playoffs, or at least, you know, or they could have the divisional crown.
Why don't we move into the next team, and we're going to be talking about those Giants. The Giants that were 0-5 that had no chance against Denver and then somehow blew Denver out. Do you mind taking a gun and shooting me? Because the Giants probably shouldn't have won that game considering how atrocious they've played this entire year.
That game was a very weird one in my mind. I've never, like, you know, you think about how stagnant that Giants offense was for the first 5 weeks of the season, started getting a little bit of momentum, and then they lose their top three wide receivers, and they're basically running Lewis out there as their number one. They're, to me, in my mind, I can't imagine them ever going into Denver, especially with Denver coming off a bye, having the ability to game plan basically for 2 weeks and then just getting destroyed the whole game. The Giants just outplayed them. You know, the defense looked a lot more explosive than they had in the past. And, you know, once Sanders went out for the Broncos, that pretty much spelled it. They couldn't get anything going on the ground, and that just kind of ate up that offense. So it was a very good win by the Giants, but I don't think there's anybody that expected them to go in there and win in that game at all.
No, I don't even think the most diehard fan expected them. I mean, I'm a huge Giants fan, and I expected them to lose by 14 points. I didn't expect them to win by 2 touchdowns. So I'm extremely surprised. But I've been listening to a lot of, you know, talk radio this week for sports, and what they're saying has made a lot of sense, that the offense was in such a bad spot that they dumbed it down so much, and they did stuff that brought them back to fundamentals that make them have to rely on other people, because they had no one in terms of a receiving corps that was really able to come and step in and get 12 targets for the entire game. So they just decided to run the ball the entire time. And with how good Darkwa has run behind this improving offensive line, it's still bad, but it's been at least improving over the last few weeks. I would say that it allowed them to run 2 tight end sets, get a lot of blocking, and just keep piling up yards, and kept the defense fresh, which forced Simeon to look absolutely terrible. But I could see them having something similar this week, even if Sterling Shepard is back. I could see Sterling Shepard taking some of the potential carries away and getting targets instead, but I could see them kind of trying to stick to the same type of offensive game plan that they had, because you're going up against a Seattle defense that is still a good defense, and you want to control you're going to want to control the clock, and the way to do that's running the ball.
And I think, too, what you also saw is there was a pretty good shift, kind of like what you mentioned, in offensive philosophy, not only dumbing it down, but also changing the route concepts to where, you know, rather than trying to hit that big, huge downfield play like you're used to the Giants doing in past years, they basically turned it into a short game where Eli was getting, you know, from snap to throw, it was 2 seconds. And I think that helped out a lot, too, just because he's kind of a quarterback that he's always kind of needed that rhythm to get established in there. And if you've got receivers that, for whatever reason, are struggling to get open, if you get them on those quick routes to where they really only have to make that one cut, they can get the ball, and then it's up to them basically to make a play. It kind of suits Shepard and Odell pretty well. Just to let them get out in space and get moving. So I think it was a good shift in that offense, but unfortunately with everybody getting injured, they're going to have to probably shift it again to where they do utilize and go back to that kind of more power run game that they used to run back in the early 2000s.
Yeah, and I think that the other thing that kind of plagues not only the Giants offense, but other good offenses, is when you have that type of prolific talent like you do in Odell, you sometimes feel the need to try to force feed him the ball. And I understand that he's been absolutely a beast, and I'm not saying that I wouldn't want him on my team, but you kind of have to see that the offense is forcing a game plan around a single player, and it's taking them out of an element that may be beneficial. You see when they bring in Brandon Marshall to go with Odell and Sterling Sharp that they're trying to run three wide receiver sets all the time. They're going to try to be passing, and they're not giving enough opportunities for the running backs. And I understand Perkins played pretty crappy this entire season, and the fact that he's been out with an injury has allowed Darkwell to actually come in and Gallman to come in and play decently as a rookie. But you've now taken the players out of the equation, and like I said, they kind of dumbed down the game plan and forced them to kind of revert back to something that they can actually utilize. And you're seeing the Giants offense, at least through 1 week, play smart football. And sometimes when you have Odell out there and Brandon Marshall and Sterling Shepard, you're forcing the offense to do something that they're not really able to do. They don't have a great pass blocking line, and you're forcing them to pass block while routes open up and Eli to potentially scramble when he's, you know, you said that Eric Ebron had concrete hands. Well, Eli has concrete feet. You know, he can play happy feet in there, but that's about it. He can't really do much else. He's not mobile, so to expect the offense to get the ball out in 2 seconds is something that they should probably be expecting to do for at least the next few weeks until it stops working, as opposed to having to wait for routes to develop for their high-profile wide receivers. What are your thoughts on Evan Engram going forward for the rest of the year? Because he's probably the person who is going to be most utilized in the passing game. I understand Sterling Shepard is the more prolific pass catcher of the two of them, and he's had an extra year, but he's still a slot-type guy, and obviously the only slot receivers that have really, really been able to benefit over the last few years is a Jarvis Landry type, and I don't see Sterling Shepard all of a sudden becoming that 12-catch guy for 100 yards. Do you see Engram being someone who is able to keep having a good fantasy year, or...
Well, I think with Engram, I mean, he's a really good matchup just because his size. You know, he's 6'3", 240. He's got pretty good hands. He's a decent route runner. What was interesting is a lot of times the Giants were actually utilizing him out of the slot rather than lining up directly as a tight end on routes that he was involved in. I think you're going to see that decrease once Shepard gets back. I think it would be a mistake if New York decided to line Shepard up as the number two wide receiver. I think he's much more efficient out of the slot, but we'll see what they decide to do when he comes back. But Engram, I think, is approaching top 10 consideration in my mind. And I think going forward, especially with that quick game, he gives them a nice outlet. And, you know, Eli's kind of gone away a little bit from utilizing the tight end as much as they had in the past. But, you know, in the past when your top wide receiver was like Mario Manningham because Keem Nicks couldn't ever stay healthy, you kind of got to use what's there. And I think they're kind of in that similar situation as they were a few years ago. So I think Engram's definitely increased in value in my mind, and he's a guy that I might at least watch, depending on who my tight end is, or I may actually just swap him out.
All right, why don't we move into the last team that we're going to be talking about? That's Oakland. And Oakland's coming, and they're going to be going and playing Kansas City on Thursday night. Is their season over if they lose this week, and is there a chance that they win? Because the offense has looked pretty bad over the last few weeks. They've lost 4 straight games. So what are your thoughts on their season and the offense going forward?
I think, you know, if Oakland loses this week, I mean, they've lost they'll lose basically five in a row at this point. And realistically, with how that AFC West division is shaping up, I mean, at that point, they're going to be lucky to probably scrape into a wild card. Their offense was one I kind of expected to take a lot bigger step forward this year, especially with Carr having another year under his belt, a little bit more maturation. He developed really good chemistry last year with Crabtree. You know, you heard all the buzz in the off season about Cooper bulking up, and you know, while he's always been a pretty good route runner, he tended to get manhandled by, you know, really physical corners. They got Marshawn Lynch. You're thinking, okay, they got a run game where they can actually have an established grinder, which should potentially open up the pass game. But what's weird is the offense has performed basically nothing like what I expected this season. They're not given Marshawn the carries. Cooper's forgotten how to catch anything, and really the only reliable target has been Michael Crabtree still, you know, with Carr being hurt with that fracture in his vertebrae. You know, he only missed like a game and a half, but you know, he can deny all he wants that it wasn't affecting his ability, but I don't know if they changed the game plan to avoid him getting hit, but all he was doing last game was just checking down. You know, he's just dinking and dunking the ball all over the place. And if that's the case and that's the shift for that offense, that doesn't really play into the strengths of the majority of the players they have, and it only kind of solidifies the fact that they're still not going to utilize Lynch the way they should. I mean, if they're really concerned about Carr and his health, use the weapon that you brought in. I mean, Marshawn hasn't looked like Marshawn of old, but there's been a few flashes there. But again, he's a guy that needs 20-plus touches a game to get on track, and if you're giving him 14, you're basically wasting his ability. So I'm going to kind of temper my expectations on Oakland this point. You know, with the back fracture he had, I mean, there's really not a ton you can do for it just to let it heal. But again, with that position, you know, especially with a back injury, you know, defenses are going to be gunning for him. And you get another hit like that and re-aggravate it, re-injure it, you know, he's going to be out another couple weeks. So realistically, with this offense, they're kind of trending down for me. I think the one constant will still be Michael Crabtree in it. You can still count on him every week.
What's wrong with Amari Cooper?
I don't know. This was the first year I actually kind of bought into him, and maybe that's why he's sucking, is because I actually bought into him this year.
It's your fault.
It is my fault. I don't know. He's the fact that he's all of a sudden just can't catch the ball just boggles my mind. I mean, even that first week against Tennessee, I mean, they went to him three straight times in the red zone, and he dropped every single ball that got thrown his way. And I don't know how much of it's just the fact that he's not really able to get open. Maybe we've overvalued him from what we should have. You know, he was having issues with his knee there for a little bit. I mean, he's been a consistent, you know, 1,000-yard receiver, but kind of the way things are looking, he may not even make that this year. I don't know. It puzzles me a little bit that he's all of a sudden just fallen off this hard, and there's really not a lot of really no reason why he should have. I mean, it, you know, if it's a slump, eventually he'll break out of it, but you know, he's also faced a couple tough corners, last two being Casey Hayward. He'll probably get a little bit of Marcus Peters this week too. But at the same time, you know, you keep dropping everything, it doesn't matter who you're matched up against.
Yeah, and that's the thing. I had Cooper ranked very high this year. I was buying into him. I expect him to take another step forward, and I just he's not playing well. He's going up against tough teams, and I get it. And teams are going to look to take him away, and maybe they're laying Crabtree to try to beat him. But, I mean, last week he caught 5 passes on 6 targets, but he only had 28 yards. Like, he's just not getting yards per reception. Like, 5.6 yards per reception is terrible. And if you're going to get that, I'm going to need you to have, like, 10 catches. Because at least then you're getting, you know, basically 60 yards and 10 catches. So in PPR leagues, you're useful. But in a standard league, that's useless. And, I mean, right now, he's basically tied with, like, Cordarrelle Patterson in terms of fantasy points. Like, how can we rely on him to even be a flex option until he shows us anything? Or have you basically given up on him as a flex option until he proves it otherwise?
Honestly, with him in the leagues I own him in, I don't know. And it's probably more blind faith that, you know, someday he'll turn it around. I think part of it, you know, you watch him in some of the games, and granted, EJ Manuel's not exactly like a world-beating quarterback, but there's times that he's been open that Carr just wasn't feeding him the ball, so I don't know if it's more of a trust issue where he knows he can get it to Crabtree and not have to worry about it, but he's just not having the ball come his way as much. But if it's a situation, if Carr doesn't trust him as much, then maybe it is a matter of time till he gets back on board. I guess for me, it's hard. It's kind of reminds me a little bit of the, like, Allen Robinson last year, not so much from a quarterback situation, but just a production. Like, it's hard to bench somebody that's that caliber. And then once they do get back on track, you know, you miss that week that they do come back. So I think with him, I'm still going to keep running him out and hoping for the best. But it's, you know, each week it's a little harder to make that decision.
Yeah, I'm having a difficult time being able to play him. I can't cut him anywhere because of the talent that he has. And I don't want to be that type of guy that goes and cuts him, and then he has, like, a, you know, a Brian Dozier type second half for our baseball fans. But I can see him picking it up. I just, you know, with Carr hurt, it will take some time, and the offense just seems to be slumping in general. I think they just need to get back to basics, and hopefully they're able to do that this week. But, you know, they have a very tough matchup against the Chiefs, so we'll see what happens.
Yeah, I think on a short week, too, I'd be hard-pressed for this to magically be the week he comes back, too. So it may be another week of more of the same, and then, you know, next week he may have a little bit better success rate.
All right, Eric, why don't you tell our listeners where you can be reached and what you're working on?
So it can be reached at Mackey671FWFB. And starting to work on getting back in the swing of things for NFL writing, and going to try to dive into some basketball too.
All right, and I can be reached at BBrennisFWFB. You can find Eric and me on the basketball podcast, and now that basketball season started, we're going to be starting those back up. And you can find me on the Sunday Waiver Wire show with Donnie Miller. And you'll find me occasionally on the Monday and Friday shows with Justin Mason for football. So until next time, have a great football season, everyone.